Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another Inside the Cross D2 D3 podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt, and I am joined by Dan Kaplan. We are here to bring you all of the recaps, all of the analysis, and all of the looking forward to the weekend to come in Division 2 and Division 3 men's lacrosse. Dan, how are we feeling?
Great. This is exhilarating. I think this is our first nighttime recording.
Yeah, it's the after dark.
Yeah.
It's gonna get weird.
It's D3 after dark. D2, D3 after dark.
That's right. The lights are off and we're just vibing on the mics. All right. First up, huge game. Got a lot of coverage actually nationally. Gettysburg 10 or Sinus 9 in OT. Dan, break this down for me.
This game was great. Did you get to catch any of it?
I caught the highlights. I did not get to see it in real time.
There were some really good highlights that went out. I don't know how in tune to the Instagram game you are, but Grayson Johns is a student at McDaniel that does a really good job. But she caught this game, and she had a really, really cool edit. If you have some time to check that out, I would.
That's what I saw, actually. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So that was awesome. But so the game was great. It was kind of like that Lynchburg CNU game that we watched the other day.
Yep.
A couple weeks ago, I guess, at this point, where it was hectic and like people were scrambling. There's a play late in the game where your Sinus actually doesn't even get called for offsides, but they have like what seems like 8 guys over, but they all are just scrambling so much back and forth that as they're all like just barely on one side of the field, like I can pause it in real time, you know, and see like, oh my gosh. But in the moment, because they're all just scrambling so crazy and like bodies are flying everywhere, I can totally see how like it doesn't get called. But it was just to show that they were fighting with urgency and, you know, wanted to make sure that they were going into this game and leaving this game as the number one seed in the conference, which is cool. And this game has a little bit of a, in the roundup, I called it a budding rivalry, which is cool. And so in 2019, your Sinus was 7-0. They had beat ranked opponents in Stevenson and CNU. And their next game was supposed to be Gettysburg, and then the season got canceled.
Yep.
The year before, they were also 7-0. They had beat 3 ranked opponents, same 2 in Stevenson and CNU, and then added Cortland as well. They beat Cortland then, and then lost to Gettysburg. But then a revenge game in the championship. So they ended up winning the conference championship that year. And this is the first time they've played since then in 2019. And so it's really cool to see this game go back and forth. And then it ends up being an overtime game. And so it's just, you know, it's really cool to kind of watch this rivalry start to evolve in the centennial.
Out of the other OT game that we're about to talk about, which OT winner was better?
The OT game winner?
Yeah.
Oh, got to be Fletcher. His was a one-on-one dodge with like 8 seconds left. I don't want to spoil the end to it. I know you didn't catch it, so
right.
I want to save the live reaction, but it was not off of 6-on-6, I'll say that.
So pre-pod, Dan just goes, hey, do you want me to tell you how Stevenson Eastern ended now, or do you want to have a live reaction? I'm like, I always want to have a live reaction to weird stuff. So let's get into it. Stevenson 10, Eastern 9 in OT. Tee this up for me, paint a picture for the viewers, and then just blow my mind. Go.
Okay, so Eastern had done an excellent job all game, and by all game, I guess I mean through 3 quarters, of controlling the pace of play and limiting chaos, right? Stevenson's a team that wants to thrive off of that.
Yes.
And Eastern did a really good job of limiting that, to the point that the third quarter was a 2-0 quarter in favor of Eastern, you know, keeping the game uneventful. And they did a really good job of that. And then the fourth quarter came and Stevenson goes on a 4-1 run in that fourth quarter to come back and tie it at 9. In the second quarter, Eastern violated twice, or not the second, the fourth quarter, excuse me. So in the fourth quarter, Eastern violated twice at the X, which I hope you're starting to understand where this is going.
I'm seeing
for the first overtime faceoff, where they violate again and go man down. And Stevenson scores man up off of the infraction.
Oh, no.
Heartbreaking.
That's the worst. I didn't that carries over?
I guess. And I didn't know that 100% off the top of my head. And when it happened, I was like, oh, like, I don't know. But as soon as it does, you can see Canabin on the sideline, like, freaking out. He's yelling for it, yelling for it. And the ref actually restarts play. The LSM comes up, picks the ball up, and they restart play. And then it's not till like, he takes a couple steps and is about to throw it to the attackman until the same referee throws a flag and realizes, wait, that's, I guess, their third. So I don't think I realized that it carried over either. Didn't go and, like, read the rule book or anything to figure it out. But it was – I was sitting there, like, mind blown, like, oh, my God, they're going to lose off of it. And then the goal that they score, it is a nice goal. It's a pretty goal, but he is just wide open inside. Jacob Tatum is. So they take it. Ryan Coleman takes a shot wide. By the
way. Yeah. Of course it's him. Yeah.
So Coleman takes a shot wide. Nelson backs it up. And then they have like a scripted double cut that they run on an inbounds on the end line for man up.
Yep.
And the chase goes with the first cut. And then Tatum cuts behind it. And he had like, you could have parked a car inside. He was wide open and just catches it and finishes inside. So the goals are kind of like very different. But like I said, I mean, gosh, it was just a heartbreaking loss if you're an Eastern fan.
Wow.
We're a Stevenson hater.
Which one are you, Dan?
I'm a huge Eastern fan. Everybody knows that.
Of course. All right, you liked Chris Durningen here at the LSM for Eastern as well, right?
Yes, he's awesome. He's extremely disruptive. He's one of the guys that kind of like, as he's approaching, you're like, who is this goofy kid coming out to guard me? And then it's like, holy shit, the goofy kid took the ball from me and is running down the field. Oh, sorry, Matt. I cursed. I told you it was going to happen at some point.
Well, hey, listen, everyone that's listening, we're coaches now. So
yeah, that's
we
right.
Can't season filter starts all up. Of that out. We're both in season. I had a game today. I don't want to talk about it publicly. We did win. That's all that matters. All right, let's jump to the next game. Game that I saw most of, because I kind of figured it was over in the third quarter. Tufts 29, Kobe 11. This was like a walk-off homer for Tufts, continually getting up to bat. Bryce Adam back 9 points. Max Wahlbaum back 6 points. Mac Bradall back 9 points. Tufts looked pretty much unstoppable in all facets. Yes, they gave up 11 goals. And I guess you could be like, oh, let's look for holes in Tufts and say it's in net. But even then, Joe Thuer had 16 saves. So
and he's a dude with experience, too.
Yeah.
Like, they've split time in the past where I don't know if he was the first or second half goalie, but he was coming in getting minutes. So it's not like they're throwing somebody in who's, you know, fresh to it and doesn't know what to expect.
I mean, they've got five other goalies on the roster, so they should be fine. Tufts is a buzzsaw still. So I don't know if it's too late to get on the wagon. Maybe it is, but I don't know. I think they're still top three. And everyone that was like, Tufts doesn't belong top three. They don't belong top three. Like, you are wrong. This team has everyone back. And they are scary.
They're so savvy on social media. I kept waiting for them to do something with the Michael Jordan, we're back.
Yeah, I think that got played out. I saw a bunch of people do that recently, and I was just like, you don't
including
know.
Me. I do it for everything.
Do you really? All right. Fair enough. I don't know. I'm not the czar of memes. I'm not.
Yeah, maybe that's why I was waiting for it, is because I just am over-expecting it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we can't all be Dan Aburn. All right. next NESCAC game, Williams 14, Conn College 9. I don't think it's a surprising result, but if you think that Williams is a top 10 team, I think you need to recalibrate, is my takeaway. Because I didn't see huge numbers from anyone other than Corey Lund.
Right.
So if that's it, like, if you really think that Williams is a top 10 team, I think you need another win to prove it to me. I just don't. I think they're probably still top 20, but like farther up, closer to 20 than 10. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I do think that's fair. And, you know, the guy that kind of, I'll say the straw that stirred the drink was for them was Jake Hayes, and he didn't play. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And if there's, you know, the Penn State Grant Amen effect where you lose your quarterback and how do you replace him? Right. And Lund is great. It's not to say that he can't go and be a Dodger, but he was much better working off ball and kind of finding seams and attacking approaches rather than being the facilitator and the initiator the way that Hayes was.
Yeah, that's fair. And the thing about Williams too is like they do run systems that generate turnovers, create hectic, uneven situations that they can score on. I mean, that's right. You know, the height of the Wesley, not the Wesleyan effect, but the NESCAC effect of teams that just like want to score now, you know, to win games is, you know, a lot of NESCAC teams hate each other because they copy each other, which I think is the funniest thing whenever I hear like, oh, this team took this from us. They put this on their helmet. We had that on our helmet first. We had it 10 years ago. And I'm like, guys, no one cares about this. Like, we don't need to argue. You don't need to tell me this story, but keep talking to me.
The other thing that Williams has going for him is Harry Gahan's back at Gahagan, I think it is. Gahagan?
Gahan? Let's try something weird. Gahan?
Let's look it up and see if I can. I'm trying to do it off memory. Harry Gahagan. I had it the first time. Should have trusted myself. Okay. He's back in the cage. And he's, you know, a All-American candidate, which, as you said, up there, you have to have somebody who's strong in the cage.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to my previous transition. Speaking of people that might not talk to me anymore after I give my opinion on this game, Wesleyan 13, Hamilton 7. I was not a fan of this game, and I watched all of it. How do I describe this game? Lots of camera movement to track a ball that inevitably ended up on the ground, then was picked up, moved twice, and shot. And that was either a goal or a miss or a save. That was almost every possession. And it was maddening. I was watching it and I was like, this is what I'm choosing to do right now? I don't think this is what I should be choosing to do right now. But it was also like, oh, you know when you drive on the highway and there's like a car accident? Or something is going on in the woods, and this is probably more for me, but something's going on in the woods because I live in New Hampshire, and people are just driving slow to try and like see what's going on, like what's happening over there, when there's really not even an accident stopping it. It's just people like driving slow. That's what this game was. It was me driving slow. Driving slow, looking, being like, oh, they catch someone in a little tent city over here? What's going on? Oh, they pulled that guy over. I don't know why they need 7 cop cars. That's weird. Okay, cool. And then realizing I'm going 35, like that's what this game was. I should have turned it off and I didn't. Hamilton got out to a lead. Like they looked okay. They looked like we're going to have a huge upset here. But listen, Wesleyan still is Wesleyan in certain ways. And the zone still does its work. The goalie's still doing work. Max Powers, I believe, something like 24 saves, I think. Like Hamilton outshot them by 8 shots. Like, I don't know. I didn't love what I saw from either team, and I don't think I'm going to be getting that tattoo if you've been following along with the podcast narrative on that.
Hey, that's what do you call it for the chalkboard material right there?
Yeah, like, I'll give you a little locker room material. I'm not going to lie. Rayma might have sent me a couple of texts being like, hey, you know, good motivation either way. And I was like, hey, man, you either live to be the hero or you live too long to become the villain. Wow, I messed that up, and that's like my favorite quote.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah, wow. Matt, please edit that out. I'm embarrassed. all right, let's move on to kind of I think we can call it an upset, but not really. Union 10, St. Lawrence 6. My only real question is Union a top 10 team now?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't lost to somebody who is an RIT or a Norma Williams team since like 2018.
What?
That's true. It's true. Oh my God. In 2020, their only loss was to Williams, who at the time was like a top 5 team.
Yeah.
And then the year before that, and I could be wrong, but I think that the only losses they had in that year, they had 4 losses, 1 to Williams and 3 to RIT.
Wow.
Yeah.
Coming in with facts.
It's crazy.
To have with facts, man.
Union is, I mean, until they lose to somebody who isn't a loaded Williams or RIT, they're definitely a top 10 team to me. they're awesome on defense. They communicate well. Yeah. They're tight-knit. They're really, really, like, organized, I think is the best way to describe them. And then they started a freshman in Cage in this game who gave him 15 saves.
Yeah, that's no joke. That's a good team. I think they're probably closer to 10 than 5, but I'll put them in the top 10. I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah. No, definitely not. It stinks they've only had 2 games, but I mean,
right.
We're dealing with sample size thing across the board.
I mean, that's basically the case.
At least up there.
Or sinus as well. So, yeah. I mean, you know, 1-1 kind of looks bad when you've played 2 games, I guess. You're 500. That's weird. This game caught my eye. I see a lot of this season, and I don't like it. And I know people get upset when I bring it up, but like, let's talk about Dennison 32, Wabash 4.
Ugh.
Settle down, Dennison. You're Dennison. Okay? You already beat this team 29-1 last week. Why did you have to put 32 up? Congratulations, Big Red. You're on the podcast for all the wrong reasons. I don't love it. But I also don't love Wabash playing them twice because they don't have anyone else to play. I don't understand. I don't know. That's hard. Like playing a team that already beat you 29-1 and then they just throw 32 on your throat. Like
throttle you again. Yeah. That's tough.
Awful. Like why? I mean, I'm not saying like why bother playing? Cause like we all know the value of playing now because it's been taken away from everyone, even us as people that watch the games. But I don't know, man. I see this across D3 this year. And the argument that everyone makes is like, oh, well, you know, it's college lacrosse. And at the same time, though, like, do you think the AD of these schools that are getting beaten by 30 goals isn't looking at it and going, well, I wonder what team I'll cut next? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's actually a real thing. Like, results are a thing.
Yeah.
Recruiting is a thing. Like, I don't know. I don't know how you get people to come to your school when you're losing by 30.
Yeah, it's hard. And we've had this conversation a couple times where it's like, shouldn't it be more important if you're testing healthy than it is that the team is in your conference, right? Yes. And so if you can find an equal opponent that is also healthy, and everybody's testing anyways, like the sense of it just hurts me to my core that we can't just, hey, you healthy? Yeah, me too. All right, let's run this thing. And so we get 2 games where then Dennison could have played, you know, somebody who would have given them a better game. Wabash could have played somebody who would have given them a better game. And everybody's happy. And if everybody's testing, everybody's happy and healthy, right. I don't see how it could go wrong.
It's the argument of like the AQ versus the, you know, balanced schedule, right? Like what's more important, the AQ or playing teams that, you know, challenge you and make you better? I would think.
It is not even just challenge you and make you better. It's provide your student athletes with an experience that they're going to,
right,
you know, value versus, you know, this is a situation where it's they're not on level playing fields to begin with.
Yeah, I don't love it. I mean, I get it if you're like, if you want to come at me with the hardo attitude, cool, that's fine, you're entitled to your opinion. I don't think it does anyone any good, you know. Score 25 and stop. And listen, I've been on teams where I coached and when I played where they just stopped. And I was like, thank God they stopped. And I know with a shot clock, it's hard. And you can make all these excuses you want. I just have seen it from the beginning where it's like literally checking the D3 score page is like opening up a meme of like the dog in the house is on fire. Yeah. You know, like I just don't think that grows anything. I don't think that helps anyone. Do you know what I mean? I just don't think it helps anyone to score 30. That's, you can be in my face about that. And listen, I wrote about a team, JCU, John Carroll, that like put up 32 this week. So like, again, I get it. It's getting you some eyeballs, I guess, but like it also is going to get you the, why are you doing that kind of attention? So that's, you know, I'm just going to bring it up. This is my one time of the year that I'm going to bring it up. I won't bring it up again unless I see a particularly egregious example.
Yeah. The other instances where that it makes it particularly egregious to your point is when you're like leaving starters and you got dudes that started the game and have scored 300 points in their career scoring your 28th goal in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Like that's excessive. Like when you sub your dudes and you're getting guys that don't typically play experience and they're the ones that are cashing in, you know, like that's a bit more understandable. And, you know, is there's something to be said for the dude that busts his ass all year and then wants to get onto the field and finally has that opportunity in a game where the starters have taken care of business.
Let me lay out a situation for you, because this actually happened to me. So I'm coaching at a school. Hey, this school no longer exists. That's my hint. And we were losing, and it was okay. We were losing by like 12. I expected to, you know, I didn't think we were going to win. And in the fourth quarter, they had a senior goalie who was like, you know, he was great. He's a great goalie. But they put him in at attack. And I just remember seeing him like trot, and he's like not an athletic kid, like no shots, no shame. Not an athletic kid, just a good goalie playing attack. He wasn't a goalie slash attackman. He was an all-time goalie that went to his coach and was like, yo, can I play attack to try and get some goals in these fools? And the coach was like, yes. So I'm going to tell you something. I got a problem with that. In the moment, I still have a problem with it. And I looked over and I just went, are you serious? And I used a different word. And he was like, what? And I was like, okay, man, like I'm not responsible for what happens. And he was just like, what? And I was like, you're going to put a goalie in, man? Like, what do you think I'm going to do? You know what I mean? And that's a real conversation that happened in the box. And I just, as soon as we got the ball in offense, I called a timeout. And I was like, listen, defense over here, offense, go talk to my assistant coach. And I told the defense, I was like, guys, we just can't let this guy score on us. That's all. That's it. I don't care if anyone else scores. We're going to triple team this goalie kid. 0% chance he scores. Got it? And everyone was just like, yes, coach. And I was like, good. We're good. We'll go back. And like the kids, he just got tripled every time he touched the ball. And the other coach was mad.
He's like, this is no fun. I didn't want to do this.
Yeah, but he kept him in. And yeah. I was just like, okay, man, this is what you want to do. Like, and listen, we ended up losing by like 15 instead of 12. And I was like, cool with it. You know?
Yeah.
It is what it is. But again, that's the kind of situation that can like lead. Like, I think that's like a shady coaching thing to do to someone. I don't know. But that's me. And again, the school no longer exists. Wait, the school I coach at no longer exists either. So, hey, nobody lost. Nobody won. It doesn't matter. All of the wins transferred to some other school, I think, for both of us. That was a weird story. Let's go to D2. This is what you get with the After Dark. You get all the weirdness. Division 2, game of the week that we teased last week that happened right after we recorded. Kind of an upset here. I think we call it as a coin flip, but Wingate, 16. Lemoore Ryan, 15. Not the way I saw it going. But again, that's why they play the games. And I will say that Wingate is one of the teams I also highlighted last week in my write-up. Their attack is legit. And they balled out here. I do think that Lemoore Ryan is still a national power, but this does put a little wobble in their, you know, running the table, right? I don't think they're very much a number one team now, right? You can't do that. But again, Wingate lost to Queens, who just got beat by Limestone. And Limestone has quietly won 3 in a row after the loss to Newberry that we talked about a couple weeks ago. My question for you, Dan, is are you buying a late season resurgence, nay, resurrection for the Saints here?
I think it's a good streak. And I think the Queens win helps build a little bit of confidence. But I don't think it lasts past Saturday. They play Belmont Abbey on the 17th at night under the lights. And I don't know that the streak continues past Saturday.
I'm going to go with it probably won't. Let's go to another game that was just recently played. And by recently, I think yesterday. Mercy, 15. Mercyhurst, 13. No, Mercyhurst fans, I don't hate you, but we do have to talk about this game. This is a pretty big upset. Mercyhurst played a lot of games where they were largely untested for the most part early on this season. And I got to tell you, man, Mercy just took it to them in the second half and pulled away to win it. This was very back and forth. There was some long pole goals in this one. Ooh. Who doesn't love long pole goals? Teams were trading them back and forth like baseball cards. It was great. So go ahead.
So do you think this says more about Mercy or Mercy Hurst?
I think it says a lot about Mercy. And I say that because I think Mercy is one of those teams that doesn't get a lot of attention because of their conference. Huh. The ACC is Mercy and Frostburg State and a bunch of teams I don't think anyone's heard of. And Mercy's been doing a great job. Jordan Levine doing an amazing job there. Like, he's built a team that is very front-facing, very offensive-heavy, very transition-heavy. And they, you know, they took it to Mercyhurst, a team that likes to change their styles up. Like, they can play a lot of different styles. I thought Mercyhurst is really one of the best teams in the nation. And this loss doesn't necessarily, like, change my mind about thinking that. I think maybe they're less dominant when they play a team that's as good as them, which is kind of what happened here. So, again, just two teams to watch. It's hard to even, like, talk about them because they have the same name with Hurst on the end of one of them when you're talking about them. So it's hard to, like, differentiate, try to explain them to other people. But, again, I think these are two teams to watch. I think they're definitely both top 10 teams and doing, you know, great work in Division II.
So you're not grabbing the panic button on Mercyhurst?
No, I think Mercyhurst is still really well constructed in terms of the depth. And I think that plays out over the season. I think this, you know, this is probably not a necessary loss, because you don't want to say that, even though I've said that a couple times in the podcast about certain teams. But I think this will probably help them recalibrate for the second part of their season. Speaking of teams with great second halves of their season coming up, St. Anselm's, New Hampshire's own St. Anselm College, with another big win, 21-2 over Assumption. Sneaky Any10 team to watch, 6-0, and the rest of their schedule is rematches with teams they've already basically walloped. They could easily finish the season undefeated in D2. However, they will not be playing Lemoyne due to kind of the distance of and the COVID protocols. So they're not playing everyone in the Any10. So I will put that caveat out there, but still doing work down with the nuns in Goffstown. I believe it's Goffstown. I don't know if they say they're in a different town or not, but I'm pretty sure they're in Goffstown.
I'm sure someone will have a pronunciation for you.
Yeah. Well, I was born here, so relax. all right. We also have to mention, because we love rock fights, Lemoyne and Pace with a 6-4 duel. Lemoyne winning that one. Those are two, like, really defensive teams, and that doesn't really surprise me as a result. But looking forward kind of in D2, look out for Pace versus Adelphi on Saturday. All right, let's go into the D3 weekend preview. Ursinus versus Dickinson. This is where we find out if Dickinson is good, and also by the transitive property, how good is Muhlenberg? Because Dan has a whole thing on Muhlenberg that will lead into another team that we're wondering if they're good. So, Dan, take it away.
So, Muhlenberg is interesting because they only have I think they're the best 1-3 team in the country. They have 3 losses, 1 in quadruple overtime to Dickinson, 1 by 2 goals to F&M, and 1 by 1 goal to F&M. And then they've beaten Dickinson 15-9 in the rematch. So, they have this, like, if we're going to compare them to Division I teams, they're kind of like the Ohio State of Division III in the fact that they might be one of the teams in the top 25, but we just can't tell because they have had no opportunity to play other teams out of conference, and the teams that they're playing also haven't had that opportunity. So it's just hard to tell, but it's really interesting to watch. And they're a team that if we finally get to see, you know, them versus a Ursinus or a Gettysburg, to continue this routes that they've had in these, like, really close games with Franklin and Marshall, it'll be really interesting to see exactly how good they are.
And that leads you into, is Catholic good?
Right. And there's a
thing coming. Right. This is the surprise of the podcast. He hit me with this late, and I was like, it's too late to fight you on this, so you're just going to have to convince me.
it's my newest gripe with the conference-only schedules is that we don't get to know how good Catholic is. And so they're putting up ridiculous numbers right now, scoring over 20 goals in every single game that they've played and just crushing teams. And I really want to know exactly how good they are. And fortunately, in this case, I think we will ultimately get to see that because I think they're going to make the tournament. And so at some point, we're going to get to see them play, you know, a nationally relevant team. Other than Scranton and Elizabethtown, who I think are really evenly matched. And I think Catholic is right now playing at a level that's a little bit ahead of those teams. So I think that they're probably the favorite to win the conference and get into the tournament.
This sounds like when you tried to sell me Scranton last year, too.
Well, Scranton had some key losses over the break, but
okay.
I'm not totally done trying to sell you on Scranton eventually. I'm still buying stock in Scranton. But okay. In the moment, I think I'm spending a little bit more stock. If we're talking landmark teams for this season, I'm spending some stock in John Sachs and that Catholic team.
All right. NESCAC matchup, Bates versus Colby. Bates just reopened their campus on Tuesday, and Colby is still recovering from their beating from Tufts. This one is a battle for Maine supremacy. Hopefully it goes through and everybody meets the protocols. As we've talked about before, NESCAC really does. They've done some juggling already to make sure the games are played. So let's hope that both teams get to – you know, get off the snide and get after each other. Bates basically just played St. Joe's of Maine already and didn't play last week. So it'll be interesting. I think that's an interesting game. And they put up, I think, 24 on St. Joe's of Maine. So let's see where that goes. If you were going to ask me to make a prediction, I don't know. It's hard to guess. I don't know. This one's a coin flip to me, and I'm interesting to see who comes out on top.
One more D2 game here, and we'll live get your action since we've already tipped our cap to our listeners that we're going D2, D3 after dark.
All right.
Adelphi, 15.
Yeah.
Lemoyne, 14 in double overtime.
Get out of here.
While you were in your rock fight.
They finally beat them?
Yep, 15-14, wow. Double overtime. You have to go check the video that Matt Kinnear just put out. The overtime game winner is unbelievable. It's a pole goal. We talked about everybody likes pole goals.
No, it's a long pole winner and I missed it?
Dude, it's unbelievable. There's bodies flying everywhere. It's hectic as hell. It's like, I mean, it is crazy. There's bodies flying everywhere. I already tipped it that it's a pole goal, but gosh. And it's not only just a pole goal, but it's from deep and there's an attackman wide open right next to the goal.
Those are the best.
He's except saying,
when you're the attackman. When you're the attackman and that happens, you're just like, yeah, but that still wasn't the right move.
He's like, nope, so, this is my time to shine.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Unbelievable. But awesome.
I think that's the D2, D3 play of the week. Not to skip ahead, but just we're going to spoil that now. That's the D2, D3 play of the week because you get an OT winner with a pole. That gets you the play of the week. But let's finish out kind of this preview for D3. RIT versus St. Lawrence. I feel like this one is a little less luster thanks to St. Lawrence's loss to Union. But I still think St. Lawrence's defense is a good test for the Tigers, who, you know, we've seen them kind of struggle to really go up on teams and stay up on teams like St. John Fisher, which we've talked about several times. Any thoughts on this one?
If they play the same game that they played against Cortland, they're going to lose.
Okay.
That's my take. But that's a huge if. And I guess it's possible, right?
Yeah.
Coming off of a little bit of a break. But I guess they did kind of have a chance to shake off the rust tonight against Ithaca. So to say that they are going in after a bit of a break. They were off. It was about a three-week hiatus in between games for them. The last game they played was that St. John's Fisher game that we all know how tragically that ended.
The infamous one, yes.
The hidden ball trick that wasn't a hidden ball trick at all.
The one, it's the friends we made along the way, Dan. That matters. All right. Oh, Dan, look who's back again. It's ODAC. Tell your friends. Roanoke, Hampton, Sydney. I think you think the same thing I think, which is Hampton, Sydney should take this one pretty handily. Yes?
Yes, I do. They need Roanoke, meaning they need Hampton, Sydney to like sleep through it or not to come prepared or something like that. I don't think that they're just inherently as good as Hampton, Sydney is this year, which that changes from year to year. But
yeah,
this year, Hampton, Sydney's up on Roanoke, and I don't see them, you know, unless there's some sort of ridiculous play there, you know, that or some sort of like execution thing that happens that I don't foresee.
No, I'm totally with you. I just wanted to make up a funny intro to that one. All right, last one. Washington College versus F&M. I only put this on here because I kind of want to talk about F&M a little bit. Dibs on the sly come up. Thoughts?
I'm not sure.
I think they're good, man. I think they're really good.
I'm not sure how much I can put stock into the McDaniel game.
Right.
I do think it's pretty promising, but I think that they're going to be one of those really, really weird teams that just gets better and better and better as the season progresses because they've had so much limitations over the last year. They weren't a team like Salisbury that was down on the Eastern Shore and, you know, getting all of the work that they got in the offseason and all that type of stuff.
Right.
They weren't like that. They didn't have those same things. So I think for F&M, they're just going to be one of those teams that just gets better and better and better.
F&M, I think, like, last couple years, maybe not last year, I don't remember, but the year before, 2019, they were, like, one of those teams that shot themselves in the foot with, like, penalties and, like, weird turnovers and stuff and like, weren't winning the close games and, like, just playing the ampersand games, you know, like Washington Lee, things like that. And I think this team looks, like, a little more focused. I think they look good. Like, I've seen them play. I think they might be better than we think they are.
Right. I would love that. That would be great. It would be awesome for the Centennial Conference. I think that it's not a two-headed race right now. I'm not saying that F&M is not part of that race at all.
Right. Right.
Not at all. But it would be really cool if it was just a total, like, three-way toss-up. You have no idea who could win. It could be a one-goal game in any instance where they play. And I kind of felt that way again about Gettysburg Ursinus. Like, if they played again right after that game, I don't know 100% who wins that second game. If they play 10 times, it's not like one of those teams is winning 8 of them. You know, that is definitely not the case. And for F&M to come in there and also be like, hey, don't forget about us, would just be even more intriguing as a fan.
Absolutely. Great place to end it. That's why they play the games. Everyone, I just want to remind you how good Tufts is, because last week Dan reminded everyone how good York is. So if you get a chance, check out the Jumbos. And thanks for listening. You can find me at @TheKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. Dan, where can people find you?
I'm at @DKaplan46, but you always know DMs to Kyle.
Oh, man, you got me at the end. I got lazy in the after dark. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.